With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It is Sunday, which means it's time for the Front Three Q&A with me, Adam Bolt, with the one and only Lawrence McKenna.
Sunday.
Statman Dave is here as well.
Where the heart is.
As is Chris Hennich.
Evening.
So, guys, you've been sending in your questions on Twitter. Because it's National Week, you know, it's not that exciting. We wanted to get into your questions. Let's get straight into it. The first one, a really good one here from Ryan Gibson, 1995. Who will be the next Premier League manager to get the sack? Obviously, there's a few candidates. David Moyes, of course.
Good.
Bob Bradley, you'd say.
Harsh.
I know, but I think, you know, he's up there. He's probably up there with the bookie's favourite.
He's up
favorites,
there.
I should say.
He's at home like, oh, thank God I'm up there.
And I suppose maybe Mike Phelan, although he may have bought himself a reprieve based on last week's result. I'm going to go for, it's the obvious answer, David Moyes. But I wouldn't be too surprised with the way things are going if Bob Bradley doesn't last beyond the end of the year, to be honest. What about you, Lawrence?
Do you not feel that Bob Bradley was a little bit sort of bought in on a ship which already felt like it was sinking, so he needs a bit of time, maybe? And also,
yeah,
we're only at the international break. I feel that's like a little bit harsh, isn't it?
I would say he needs time, and he, managers are given no chance nowadays to bring in their own players and really settle into a club. But it literally wouldn't surprise. I'm not saying he shouldn't get more time. I'm saying it wouldn't surprise me if he wasn't given more time.
No, very good point. Although, that's the problem with that, really, isn't it? That you can't tell the difference between time and what time would do for him. I guess who would I go for as the next manager to get sacked?
Is there anyone who wouldn't go for Moyes? Surely it's Moyesy.
Could it be? I mean, could you go West Ham way?
I think you look at West Ham, obviously Bilic is, you know, they're underperforming again this season, but I think Alan Pardew has to be a prime example. You know, four back-to-back defeats in a row, they haven't won in five.
That's a good show.
And, you know, it kind of just, the last time when the Pardew talk came back up again, sort of they pulled off that victory against Sunderland, the 3-2 win with Benteke scoring in, what, the 94th minute. But, you know, consistency-wise, they have been so, so poor over the last season and a half. And I think it could be time for Crystal Palace to move on, especially given the money they've spent on Benteke. And he doesn't really seem like he's massively firing so far for Pardew.
Okay. Dave's going for Pardew then. Chris, you got any thoughts on this one?
Mourinho.
Chris doesn't miss a beat.
Oh my God,
Dave!
Wow,
I mean, Chris. Wow. I mean, you don't, do you really think Mourinho?
Depends on the next few weeks, score really.
Oh wow,
they're fluctuating between good and bad, so it depends on the next few weeks, score.
But I mean,
this is the thing. If you look at the, you know, the third season syndrome we've discussed time and time again,
he's already into that.
Not so much that he's into that. But the pattern of behaviour in that third season is that when things go wrong, he gets quite petulant and immature and everything you don't want from a senior figure in a management position. And he's doing that now already. And so, in so many ways, it's up to him and arguably him alone to stop that spiral and start acting with the best interests of the squad. And I don't know if he's willing to do that.
We did see that last season, didn't we? The last season of Chelsea, he started calling out Matic. You know, he started calling out players publicly. And he's doing that now, Dave.
Smalling and Shaw, I think that's a slightly worrying sign. I'm not saying he's going to get sacked. But.
Chris Smalling's lost his way. Mike's disappeared and Chris has returned. And he's been absolutely woeful over the last 6 months. He's been very, very poor.
Yeah, but specifically Mourinho standard. Was calling him out on the,
why
on the
not?
Injury situation. You
know, again, we're going down this whole argument of the Jurgen Klopp approach versus the Jose Mourinho military approach. He's breaking these players down to build them back up. You know, Luke Shaw and Smalling do merit a bit of disrespect and a bit of bullying and mentality to them, because it seems like they're
not.
Do
you say
they've
merited a bit of bullying?
Not bullying, but like a bit of you're playing rubbish, sort it out type thing. And I think United have improved, barring the Chelsea result. Obviously, that was a bad one. But in the last sort of 5 games, they've played a bit better. You know, the Stoke game, they massively should have won that game. You know, it was the keeper pretty much saved Stoke in there. Liverpool, they played very well against Liverpool. And Liverpool are one of the best attacking teams in the Premier League this season. And they obviously got on top of the league at the moment. They got a draw there. And then, you know, the Burnley result, again, a tiny little bit of luck would have won that game. And then they played very well against Swansea. So I think the improvements are coming. But they just need that consistency, and the goals need to start flowing. I think it will now, is Zlatan. You know, I think it's a big confidence boost in the last game. The 2 goals he scored against Swansea City. So I think it'll start to click with Mourinho. I've got no worry of him losing his job this season.
It's very funny, actually. Like, it's not funny. I think one of the reasons they won't get rid of Mourinho is for a similar reason they won't get rid of Van Gaal, because they don't know if they have another option. And I don't know if they, like, how many top-end managers would be ridiculously attracted to a club that seems in disarray in the middle of the season, those sort of things. Doesn't mean that Manchester United is not a good prospect. I wonder. It's just so funny how many parallels there are between fans of rival clubs. So Liverpool fans were speaking very similarly about Brendan Rodgers until they heard the name Jurgen Klopp.
Right.
I just see parallels between the times when Liverpool fans were defending Brendan earlier on in the season. You know, give him time. He needs to be able to bed these people in. You know, he took Liverpool close to the title not long before that. Things were a little bit better, all these draws. And then another option came along and everyone suddenly went, well, I mean, he should go. I mean, if you get the chance to upgrade. I just wonder how many United
fans. We're talking one of the best managers ever in Jose Mourinho. Let's not forget that. Poor last season, but you know,
a little bit.
He won the European Cups.
Dave. Yeah, but Dave, a little bit of a poor last season.
I don't think we can write him off that badly. I think that's a lot.
I don't think he's going to get sacked this season, because I think, as you say, Dave, they're sort of running through the options. I think he'll at least be given to the end of the season, and maybe they'll assess it then. If things don't quite work out, then maybe the situation will change.
Exactly. I think there's also a difference in evaluating whether a manager should go and whether a manager will go. And I think most people can make a really good argument for why Mourinho should go based on getting rid of other managers and whether his form has been good and those sort of things. And also, it's also funny that, you know, 1 minute you can say, I think Smalling and whoever else in the squad has merited criticism or bullying, and then not put Mourinho in that. In that bracket.
Dave, can I ask you, for example, hypothetically, if Mourinho was to leave at the end of the season, whether he jumped or he was pushed, who would you like to see come in as kind of the ideal man to sort of come into Manchester United and take over a few years and sort of steady this shit?
Say it, Dave Pochettino.
Well, I think it's got to be Ryan Giggs, right? You know, he's really shown recently how he's cutting his teeth in top-level management.
He's really outperforming
everyone. He just doesn't want a job at the moment, does he? No, I think it'll... You know, someone like Thomas Tuchel, someone like Carlo Ancelotti maybe later on. But I don't know. I think this Mourinho project, is going well and it's going the right direction. United are a few wins away of going on a really good run of form. And having that confidence, I think that's something that they need to gain again for some of these players, is to pick themselves up and push themselves to the next level. But I think this, you know, there's still signings are needed to get United to where they want to be. But I think the Mourinho project so far is going very well and will continue to improve.
Very well.
Okay. It's going okay so far, I take but
fucking hell.
Let's see how it progresses over
the sunshine for these guys.
We're going to win. We're going to win the EFL Cup, and everyone is going to be very happy. All right,
Dave's a glass half full kind of guy.
I mean, Dave is telling me the glass is full right now, and I'm looking at literally someone who's just finished a glass of water.
What's in the glass? That's what I want to know.
Next question here from Carlos Zaldivar, always sending in the good questions. He said, it's a two-part question. First off, why did Adam leave TFR?
Now, this is a great question. Adam, can I...
Dave, you want to tackle it on? To you? Yes, I'll tackle on. No pay dispute.
Creative bullying in the workplace.
None of those things. There was no.
You got sacked. US
figure there to push me out.
Just sacked you because you told True Geordie to leave. Wasn't that what was going around?
Yes, that's exactly what it was.
Adam, can we pose you this question? Adam, why did you leave the Football Republic?
So, you know when you break up with your girlfriend, you say, it's not you, it's me. It was that sort of situation. No one was sacked, no one was pushed out. Very amicable sort of thing. I was there since last...
No one's implying that you were, mate. Why would you even bring that up? No.
It's not me, it's you.
It's definitely you. No, I just thought, I've been there since, you know, if you guys know, I've been working on that sort of producing and helping them make content since last May. So I haven't been there for a year and a half. I thought it's time to move on to maybe some new projects, see if there's anything else exciting out there to work on and exciting people to work with.
Freelancing and hopefully now... Fun.
Yeah, freelancing and hopefully put a bit more time into the front three as well. I think, you know, if you follow us on Twitter, you saw we had a little sort of summit going on last week where Chris came down to London. We had a good sort of meeting about our plans for 2017. So I think, you know, it's the time
Lawrence
to...
Lawrence drank far too much beer.
Far too much beer, let's be honest.
Yeah, that me.
Yeah, and definitely not Dave. But yes, it's the time to maybe try some new projects and hopefully one of those will be the front three.
You took it as far as you thought your abilities would allow you? Because ultimately you're a limited producer.
No.
Oh, right, okay.
Yes. I'm not saying that, I'm just saying...
I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Just stop being exciting, that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
No, I haven't said any of that. I like how you're all just...
Well, you said you wanted new exciting projects, so that must mean it stopped being exciting at TFR.
Oh, no.
Was the sex bad?
Something new. This metaphor has gone way too far. The second part of Carlos's question, though, is did you at least find Colin before leaving?
Oh, that was a good question.
The answer is no. He did. I never found the delivery thief. So he got away with it, guys.
For new listeners, Adam had a chicken sandwich stolen.
A chicken and halloumi sandwich.
Chicken and
stolen.
Halloumi
got it delivered to TFR Towers. We're really looking forward to it. Some guy called Colin stole it. Never found the culprit, so it's the investigation is ongoing. Carlos also asked another interesting question. Carlos Zaldivar said, how is a player's confidence affected differently in a loan move versus a buy back sale?
Depends which game you're playing, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway. So essentially, there's two important things to differentiate between a buyback and a loan. A loan you will return to your parent club at the end of the season or at the end of the loan period. Buyback, there is not that guarantee. And essentially, the way I interpret the two from a kind of talent acquisition side of things and a technical director side of things is in a loan move, it's the club essentially saying, we still believe you're on course for your development path and we trust that this move will help you facilitate that next step. In a buyback, essentially, and perhaps rather subtly, the club is saying, we no longer feel you were on that path to the projected potential, but we still feel that you could one day return to it. So we're going to limit our potential loss and put a buyback in so that if you do get back on path and back on track, we can then return and rebuy you. So it's perhaps a little bit more confidence having to be sold with the buyback. Or it could be a little bit inspiring. I guess it depends very much on the character. You look at, is it Munir, the Barcelona chap? He went to Valencia on a buyback. And it's not been a great move for him, largely because of Valencia's instability. But again, at least he knows that if he performs individually, I guess, there's a chance that Barcelona might come in and seek to buy him. I don't know what the buyback fee is. I don't know if they're ever made public, actually.
Munir one was a loan, but... I think building on that point, it's quite interesting. It's probably like the best way to position that with the players within your squad or within your club, if you were the manager, would be obviously to judge their personality. You know, sending someone as a buyback to send them away, like Chris is saying they're not good enough. Maybe that will rile some of them up and motivate them to perform at a higher level and put, you know, more hours in training and then go to that club, learn and then come back. You know, like Denis Suarez, who went back to Barcelona after a good spell at Villarreal, or, you know, if you need, you know, a fella to, you know, you need to put your arm around another player, like be a father figure, maybe a loan is a bit better because then, you know, they are still part of the club. So maybe it's to do with the personalities of the players as well as what the club wants to do.
I think Dave is right, by the way. I just checked, Munir is actually on loan. He's not on a buyback. Oh, excuse me. The best example I can remember is Negredo when he was at Real Madrid. This is coming back strong. He was on a buyback. I'm trying to think if there was any others there.
Morata was a buyback, wasn't he? Alvaro Morata?
Yes.
That worked out pretty well.
A lot of Madrid players seem to fall.
Denis Shurashev, the lad that he played for Villarreal, had a really good season at Villarreal and went back to Rafa's Real Madrid and just didn't really have a sniff, unfortunately, because he was quite a decent player that season at Villarreal. Very direct left winger and a natural left winger, you know, going down the byline and whipping it in. So, yeah, it does work for some and doesn't work for others.
Yeah, I suppose it's also a combination of what coach you go to as well, right? I mean, there's, for instance, people are discussing Coutinho at the moment and, you know, whether he'd be happy at somewhere like Real Madrid or Barcelona. And the reply from his immediate camp is part of the reason he'd look to stay at Liverpool would be because of Jurgen Klopp. And you sort of think, well, a similar thing could apply to a loan or a buyback would be, you know, does the player see this as a short-term thing? So, for instance, going to Juve might be great for Morata because he's with a coach who can give him great coaching intelligence. Whereas maybe if you go to a club where, you know, you're used more as just a tool sort of for your ends, maybe it's not such a positive thing.
You've got to remember as well there are financial implications. So if, let's say, I'm selling Dave to Lawrence's club and I insist that there's a buyback, you go on whether you like it or not, and I insist to Lawrence's club that there's a buyback, he could very easily then turn around and say, okay, but I'm not going to pay the fee that you want for his transfer. I need a lower fee because the profit margin for us is not viable in terms of that buyback if you choose to sign him.
Yeah.
Which I think is why Premier League clubs don't really do it. Because that was one thing I said of Mourinho, that not putting them in for Lukaku and De Bruyne was a real poor move.
A few interesting international questions here. First up from It's Mamido, Jeff on Twitter says, how do you make the international break interesting? How about moving it to the summer? Multiball is a good suggestion. It's a great question, though, because obviously everyone seems to hate the international break. It's just because domestic football seems to be so much more interesting, though. There's a lack of passion about international football.
Yeah, but don't you think that's because I think that's more of a branding thing than a sort of an actual problem with the game. There are so many good things that happen in international football that just don't get covered. Like, that, you know, I guess the problem is partly that it's not all in one place. It's very, you know, there's very poor coverage of it, so it's very difficult to find it online apart from, you know, the same click of, I think, is it Iwobi flicking the ball over someone's head?
Yeah. I mean, I think you usually tend to focus on your own team, though, don't you, in international football? So obviously, it must be in England.
I don't quite get why.
Because, as you say, where would I go and watch, say, Brazil or Argentina, which was on the other night? There's no access to that for me, unless, like you say, the Iwobi Vine is on Twitter and there's certain goals that pop up, all that sort of stuff.
So then my point would be, educate people. Don't even educate them. Just show them, look, this is what we've got. This is how good this is. And, you know, if you're willing to spend so much money on the Premier League because it's such a massive product, I guess my point would be, If your marketing team is so good, then you can market me more than one league, not just, you know, this Premier League, which everyone's already obsessed with anyway.
Do you think part of it is the fact that it's all sort of, like you say, it's all in different countries and it's all so very far apart and it's also spaced out, that the consequences of the games feel, they don't feel as concrete? So when you watch the Premier League, everyone knows what's at stake. It's every week you're playing towards winning the league, same with the Champions League, all this sort of stuff. But with international football, it feels kind of tangential. I mean, what do you make of Jeff's suggestion that you do it? But what do you make of Jeff's suggestion? You sort of bunch it all up in the summer. Why not do all the World Cup qualifiers in a couple of weeks? You think, yeah, that's the logistical sort of counterpoint to it. But in terms of just getting the interest back into international football, it's obviously fading.
The responsibility rests on the people covering it, really. I mean, you know, the problem is the people, it seems less of a problem with the people sort of receiving the coverage and more the problem with the people who cover it. But sort of making excuses for not covering it in the first place. They're sort of being like, oh, it's boring, which we both know is not true. Like, you know, there are so many journalists out there who cover international football who do say, you know, there are elements of it that maybe need a reboot because of, you know, the way that FIFA's gone or the way that UEFA's gone. But then also the coverage, you know, I mean, that part of the reason that journalists don't want to cover it is because they can't get the money for it because there's no one else wants to pay for the articles, etc., etc. Or either that or there's a very limited number of articles that they've got there, so people base it on the clicks, and you know, that's down to making coverage in something which is marketized as opposed to something that you believe is sort of for the greater good. So maybe public service broadcasters need to look at it. I mean,
if there's a human interest angle, you can normally find a decent, so like Kosovo was a great example.
Exactly.
But I mean, Dave, what do you think?
Like sharp turnarounds, even like if there's a team that's in good form, it depends really. I agree with you though. It's not across the board as appealing as say like the Premier League. Realistically, you could sell a story on any Premier League club within reason, but yeah. International football is a little bit more difficult. It depends. It's such a I think international football, honestly, it's just something that not enough people find enjoyment with because I don't think they have enough connection with it. The idea of England and Scotland or whomever, for the most part, I think is quite boring to fans. Whereas, say, Liverpool or Arsenal or whoever your club is, that realistically has a connection that you've built yourself. And because it's almost omnipresent for you, you play at least, say, once a week, twice if you're in Europe in a big club, then that means it's so much easier to build that connection to have the kind of continuity of it in your life. Whereas England is what, once every 2-3 months on average.
Yeah, arguably also though, Chris, that falls down because they're all Premier League players, and you know, so you should have a connection with those players.
But they're not all your. But they're not. That's the thing, is those club players are kind of yours every single week. The international players change every single time. So. Equally as well, you could have to cheer on a potential rivals player. So Arsenal fans have to cheer on Dele Alli when maybe a week prior they were calling him the worst thing under the sun.
I mean, I see your point, but at the same time, I think maybe you would have the appreciation of another team's player. And maybe you know, I mean, why can't a Liverpool fan appreciate someone like Dele Alli? Why do you have to get so, I guess, I understand why you have to get so
obsessive. A Liverpool fan necessarily, but an Arsenal fan.
Well, I mean, I think there needs to be a bit of a shake up.
That's the problem, is rivalries really do run deep for a lot of people. Like it's hard to genuinely cheer a rival player, even if he's playing under the banner of your country.
It's hard enough to be on a podcast of Lawrence McKenna supporting Liverpool.
That's a good point, Dave. I don't want to soil the brand.
I think that like in terms of the qualifying, it's a potentially they could rejig that. Like, what I'd like to see is like a global league. Like every single country in the world is thrown into this global league, and you sort of like play each other for places, similar to what the FIFA rankings should be, but aren't. And then off those FIFA rankings, you'll get put into the Euros, you'll get put into the World Cup, and so forth. Obviously, it's a massive shake-up, but it'd be a little bit more competitive if you're actually playing for places instead of, I don't know, playing against a team that you're expected to massively beat. You know, the likes of Liechtenstein, the likes of Estonia, that probably may do a bit better for their development in playing each other, getting more competitive against each other and then pushing on. You know, seeing the likes of Germany versus England, seeing the likes of Spain versus Holland, that's kind of what people want to see. And unfortunately, because international football isn't a global brand and it isn't to make money, we're going away from that sort of Premier League model of people want to see the best teams playing the best players in the best stadiums.
The problem is that's a bit of a fallacy.
Yeah, maybe
though.
Takes away from what makes the World Cup special.
Yeah, exactly. That's a bit of a fallacy set up by people who want to make more money out of it, because what they say is, well, you only want to see the best, and you only want to, and that's not necessarily true. I mean, I see a point, Dave. People do want to see great football, but it sort of takes a.
Well, on the other side, it's not just great football. It's also that you're seeing Estonia playing Liechtenstein, which will be a more competitive game, which will. And be for a better spectacle, which, you know, instead of Estonia or Liechtenstein going away to Germany and playing like six defenders, two, you know, three midfielders, and then whatever we've got left up top, one up top. I think it'll be more competitive. These teams will have to come out and they might have to play different systems and they might have to outthink each other than going against every single time that they go out against the likes of Spain and being like, oh, lads, we're going to get done here. I think it will be more a competitive environment, and the competitiveness will improve everything, as well as being more entertaining for a fan. Mm. Hence, the people wanting to watch more of it.
Well, let's stick on England for this next question from James Cabello. He said, "Should Southgate get the England job? If not, who should get it? It does look like Gareth Southgate will be appointed the next permanent England manager." Chris, what do you make of this one? I mean, there's not many options in the end, so perhaps Southgate should get the job.
That's a depressing way to think, though, isn't it? There's no many options.
It's kind of the reality of it, though, isn't it?
It is, and I say that because I don't think Eddie Howe wants to pull himself away from Bournemouth, which is understandable because he's spent so long in that team that he's earned this position in the Premier League, and I imagine he wants to eke out every bit of potential they've got. It's a tough one with Southgate because he was decent at Middlesbrough from what I can remember, but the problem with him at the under-21s was arguably a problem that is symptomatic of England, which is in the qualifiers he was fairly okay, and then he got to a tournament with the under-21s and they absolutely pooped the bed. They just couldn't seem to handle it at all, and it was very bizarre because it was a really decent team, actually a decent squad. I remember Lawrence and I went down to do the unveiling and everything, and just hearing him talk, he is a good talker. I think he can understand the game and articulate his thoughts very well. It's how that translates to the field, though. I think that's one of the things that probably Gary Neville learned when he went to Valencia, was that it's so easy to deconstruct a situation after the event. It's being able to plan ahead of that and predict what is likely to happen. That's the skill of a manager, realistically.
I also think with a lot of international managers, they tend to need backing, because there's such a short space of time spent with them, you know, that there needs to be something created around the camp which gives players an instant motivation. And I understand that's only one way of doing it. There are other managers who manage to do it differently. But if you look at all the big figures, they've got their teams, they're backed by people, and they're figureheads of sorts. And Gareth Southgate hasn't become a figurehead, arguably, because of a number of reasons for England. But, you know, arguably the FA haven't created a figurehead or put their weight or backing behind someone enough or wholeheartedly enough to get the results that they want.
Sometimes the way in which a manager arrives can help but hinder things a little bit as well. You've got to remember he's come in as interim and then been given the position theoretically amid talk of there's no better options. Not in the sense of there's no better options. He's such a great coach, quite literally. Oh, what a terrible situation for England.
Where the comma goes, Gareth.
With a dearth of candidates. He's the best we've got. And I worry if that could potentially harm him as well. It's a tough situation. It feels like we are trapped in a sort of wheelhouse of just negativity, in the sense of we talk about the problems, we identify the problems, and do they really change? I mean, that's the thing. Is it Martin Glenn, that one of the FIFA's, the FA selectors, who said he wasn't a football expert and yet was also tagged with finding Allardyce's replacement and Hodgson's replacement, and said that in public, said, "I'm not a football expert."
I mean, sometimes it can help to bring experts in from other fields, but I, at the same time,
we're tired of experts, you know?
Yeah, good point, Adam. Yeah. And that, thanks, in many Michael ways, Cove, represents your entire political leaning.
I mean, Trump just shows it. Alexis Galitzin, I should say, says, "How comes Kosovo has been recognised by UEFA when it hasn't been by all UN members?" Lawrence?
This one is quite a simple answer. Because you'd argue that democratically in most international organisations, if you want to measure sort of legitimacy by international organisations, which is probably not the best gauge because most people have political interests, alliances, ways that they want to conduct themselves, a lot of people have a political interest, if you like, then you would say that at least over 50% or more in most international organisations, Kosovo is recognised as a country. It's totally down to UEFA, essentially. They're recognised by quite a majority by UEFA. the more sticking countries will be Serbia, where basically the to put no finer point on it, Serbia does not think that the land that Kosovo is in belongs to Kosovo, and they actually conducted what most people termed as a genocide a few years ago of Kosovan people. And you know, I mean, in many ways people would say that UEFA is using its political sway, or political, whatever you want to call it, clout, to help a country like Kosovo gain international recognition, not only for political reasons, but also just for human reasons as well. So the reason they do is because there's a majority, democratically speaking.
Philip at Philip D636 says, any thoughts on the A League? My team Perth got destroyed today, so has relevance. Anyone have any knowledge of the A League? I have exactly zero.
Great.
I was watching, let me pull up his name, I was recently watching a player actually.
I was assuming that people would have no knowledge, so I was going to say, Philip, if you know any good journalists, or you know, people you follow that cover the A-League and voices that you like and admire, throw them our way, let them get in touch with us, and we can get them to get them on to talk about the A-League.
Why not? Free advertising?
Yeah.
Jamie McLaren. That's who I was watching.
Who?
Jamie McLaren. I'm sure... what was the name of the questioner?
Philip D636.
I think Philip will know exactly who I'm talking about. Jamie McLaren, I believe he's half Scottish, half Australian. He's a forward. He's only about 21. Very quick, very direct. Can play up top or wide right. And I liked a lot of what I saw of him. And I believe he's out of contract soon, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him doing an Aaron Moy and have a move, maybe to Europe, maybe even to North America. You never know.
Philip, yeah, if you know any A-League experts to throw our way, we'll get in touch with them and try and get them on to chat some A-League. Here's a really good question from JJ92X on Twitter. Should we start questioning Arsene Wenger's development of wingers, or lack of it? The Ox and Walcott struggle for consistency while Gnabry flies the nest and looks reborn. This is an interesting question, isn't it, Dave? I mean, you could take it even larger than wingers and just look at Arsene Wenger's development of young players in general. I mean, what do you make of his record?
Well, obviously he's got quite an interesting record, because there's a lot of players there that he's really turned into superstars. You know, the likes of Cesc Fabregas is definitely a prime example of a player that Arsene took under his wing and really, you know, turned him into this all-creating, all-goal-scoring attacker midfielder that moved back to Barcelona. But I think the problem with Walcott and Oxlade-Chamberlain is they have been pushed from position to position. Oxlade-Chamberlain, what, central midfield, attacker midfield, left midfield, right midfield. And then you go to Walcott, again, left midfield, right midfield, striker. So the problem, I think, with Arsene Wenger is that he wants these players to be too flexible. And in a way, sometimes you need to think, okay, this is what you want. This is what I want you to be. For example, I remember Oxlade-Chamberlain playing really, really well maybe a season and a half ago, maybe two seasons ago. He started off for Arsenal, played on the right-hand side. And literally, the first like four or five games of the season, he looked like a world beater. Then an injury came and he lost his place and he couldn't get back into the side. I feel like Arsenal does have a little bit of an issue of that. And maybe he needs to, especially these wide players, like, you know, it's a great question and it's a great point. Sometimes you need to designate these players' positions and get them to study that role. You know, another player that jumps out is Jack Wilshere. You know, a player that played wide for Arsene Wenger, played on the left-hand side, play on the right-hand side, can play central midfield. You know, again, another player that plays too many roles and needs to sit down and be like, okay, what actually is my position? Where do I need to develop myself? So it's a good question and it's a good point. But I think this, you know, where Wenger's taking this squad, it could be his final season at Arsenal.
Just one note on Gnabry. He went on loan to West Brom a few years ago and apparently wasn't that professional with it. Was quite overweight and didn't make the most of the opportunity. So I think that plays a small part into it. I also think that, again, the reason they sold him was not a desire to sell him as much as make money on him, because he was in the last year of his contract.
That too.
Like, you either make $5 million on him or he has a good season and then you make absolutely nothing on him. It was a very difficult position, I think, for Arsenal to be in.
Lawrence, do you think there's any legitimacy to the question about whether Arsene Wenger's not almost strict enough and not cutthroat enough with youth players, that maybe he gives them too many chances, maybe he puts too much faith in them? I mean, a lot of those sort of questions were asked when he was sort of trying to bring through young players when the Emirates was being built, and they were trying to deal with the sort of budget issues there where they didn't have the money to compete with the top teams. But even now, you know, you see Arsenal fans who are exasperated with Theo Walcott, who are exasperated with Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, rightly or wrongly. I mean, there's a debate there, but they seem to think maybe these players should have been cut loose a few seasons ago.
I mean, like you say, I suppose you can make an argument either way. The strengths of Walcott, there are, I mean, he does have strengths. But then it's more about consistency, isn't it? And then you'd argue that's less about the position of the player and more about the overall management of those players. And just a few years ago, we were talking about how good Arsene Wenger was at bringing those players through, nurturing those guys, finding the right position. You know, he changed the position of Thierry Henry. I mean, not by a lot. And arguably, Thierry Henry was also already great out on the wing.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And maybe another manager would have done the same. And he sort of showed another manager, he showed other players within the team stronger positions, ways to play those positions. He developed some fantastic players at Arsenal out at left wing back, arguably, with someone like Ashley Cole, and got the best out of him, and then he moved on. I think it's more about it's almost a luck of the draw, if you like. I still think that, you know, if Wenger got his hands on a couple of other players out there, then he'd have a great fun with them. But like you say, maybe he's been hamstrung.
Yeah, I wonder if it is the names you mentioned there are obviously towards the start of his tenure at Arsenal, maybe. As in recent years, people sort of point the finger and say he's lost his way in the transfer market. He's sort of lost how to find those sort of bargains like Thierry Henry that he found so many years ago. Maybe he's sort of lost his touch with youth development.
I don't think he's lost his touch as much as he's got so many more rivals doing it now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people essentially do the same as him.
You're right.
He was shopping in a market that his competition around him didn't know. Because if memory serves, I could be totally misremembering this. At the time, a lot of managers in the Premier League were British. So realistically, even if you played in France, you weren't going to know the market as well as he is. And whereas now, the influx of data systems and all these things that we've talked about before means that you don't have to be an expert in France necessarily to find great players. You've got to be an expert in how to interpret the data, realistically. I mean, there are certainly those that fly potentially under the radar, and guys like N'Golo Kanté maybe are a good example of that, someone who comes through less than traditional pathways. But for the most part, it's about who uses the resource at disposal, and he doesn't do that. And I think, honestly, the idea that he keeps a hold of players for too long is completely right. I mean, think of all the times that Alex Ferguson did that. He didn't, because he would happily cut guys that he didn't think were performing, and for the most part, I can't think of many, if any, that left Manchester United and went on to greater things in that sense. Guys that he cut, that's the important caveat to add to that, or the preface to start with, is that it's the guys that he cut, not like Ronaldo who went to Real Madrid. I'm talking like when he got rid of Van Nistelrooy and people like that.
It's interesting. I think you touch on there.
Ballon d'Or contender, right?
you sort of put your finger on it there, Chris, though, in terms of, you know, he was the innovator when he came in and brought all these methods and changed football over here, but like you say, sort of maybe been superseded by other managers and other people in the game. Philip, again with another question, this one's potentially for you, Dave. How is the new Football Manager, in your opinion, is it better than 2016?
Good question. I unfortunately, I've got a quite a biased opinion of this Football Manager because I didn't play last year, so I couldn't give a direct comparison. But from what I've played so far, I really enjoy the game. I feel like it's moved on from the last time I already played that in 2015. I think it is quite similar to last season's, and maybe if you played last season, you could be a bit annoyed that they haven't really moved any of the, you know, any of the tactics on too far. But I am really enjoying it. I think it's a good game, and you know, again, it's a lot of fun, but very frustrating at the start. At the start of it, I was really struggling just because I hadn't played the game for a while. And you know, you forget what you know how to open up oppositions. Opponents up when they're sitting deep and so forth, and how to deal when you're not retaining the ball. So yeah, but it's starting to get fun again.
Hate when you forget.
What do you make, Chris? What do you make of it? You've got your hands on it as well, have you?
Yeah, I haven't. I played 2016 quite recently as well. I think at this stage, the Football Manager series, it's about little changes. It's not really about huge sweeping developments. Personally, that's my opinion. I know they bring out the video every year that highlights the big changes and the new developments, but I think for the most part it largely stays the same, bar little addendums to kind of take care of minutiae and situations and things. I would say the morale is really hard to manage. That's potentially the more difficult bit I find is keeping everyone on side, because it seems that one misspoken word and everybody turns against you.
My very limited experience of Football Manager came last year when I took Manchester United for a few games, got rid of Wayne Rooney, demoralised him up until the point where he was transferred, and then transferred him. And it was some of the best fun I've ever had.
Sounds like Jose Mourinho's diary.
Genuinely, it was fantastic to just keep going back and just seeing that arrow go from almost, you know, north.
Destroying Wayne Rooney's career.
Yeah. And that green turned to a deep, deep red.
One player that I'd say, if you're looking for a right winger on Football Manager, get Gelson Martinez from Sporting Lisbon. Top talent.
Top talent. I refuse to install Football Manager because I know it's going to take up too much of my life. So I'm trying as best as I can. I would play enough FIFA as it is.
Wouldn't it be great if I was confused, another... though?
Don't have much of a job at the moment, Adam, so you might as well spend your time doing something good.
Completely unemployed.
Arguably, you're going to need to do the research for your next roles.
The disaster of currently having a little break before I go on to my new projects is that my laptop's broken and my Xbox is broken. So it's a tragic time.
Oh, shit.
Tragic time. Ray Burkew on Twitter says, would Everton be a good move for Memphis in January? A lot of talk about a loan. There's only one man to come to on this one. That is Squawker. Ooh. Sorry.
Do you want me to put an edit in there?
No, let's leave it.
Let's leave the banter in.
That was my autopilot.
It could be quite a good move, actually, in terms of Memphis needs some games. I think that's a big thing. You know, you see for... his performance for Holland this weekend was very good. Got himself two goals, scored a really good free kick. But I think he just needs that game time at Man United. It seems to get like 10 minutes when they're goal down, or 10 minutes when it's drawn. They need to score to win the game. It's a bit too much pressure, and it kind of, Memphis doesn't really work with that pressure. You know, kind of falls into his shell and, you know, tries too much, tries to beat everyone on the pitch, doesn't keep the game moving, doesn't play the simple square pass when he needs to and make a move forward and get into a better position. It's just a bit too slow when he's got the ball at his feet. And I can kind of see why Mourinho would be frustrated. But then again, he just needs a bit of... he does need that, maybe the four or five games in a row to build that confidence up. And one thing that you'd say at about Ronald Koeman, he's quite good with your sort of inside forwards, your wide players that are running in, you know, the work he did with Southampton, Sadio Mane and Tadic at times, and Shane Long, who used to play in a wide position when Pelé was through the middle, was quite good. And they seem to enjoy his instructions of playing out wide and being quite direct. So it could be a good move for Memphis and for Everton, but it has to be a good move for Manchester United. So they've got to include something like a buyback or, all the loan deal going through. But the Everton Twitter account did tweet about Memphis today, so maybe it's already happened.
What did they tweet? No smoke without fire.
It was an international update. They said that Malassi's Democratic Republic of Congo team were down 1-0 to Guinea, but Memphis had scored to give the Dutch a 1-1 at the time result against Luxembourg.
So hashtag confirmed.
That is interesting.
Or Liechtenstein, actually. Not. Yeah, Liechtenstein. One of them. One of the small countries beginning with an L.
Why would it? Why would that be relevant to Everton? I mean, surely that shows.
Mr. Kellenberg?
Right, okay. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I mean, surely that's what people are saying. They're probably they're walking in Memphis, mate.
Yeah, they are. Signed already. Yeah, number basically. 7, apparently.
Insulting Luke to Door at Black Shadow 179 says.
What's the shirt number?
Luke Door says, who would be the best UFC fighter out of all of you and why? I assume he's asking this because of UFC 205, which was on last night, this morning, technically, in the UK.
Mm. Did you watch it, Adam?
I didn't. I could not face staying up until 5 a.m. I watched highlights this morning. Conor McGregor won. He's got two belts now. Is that right? After beating Alvarez.
Yeah.
First UFC fighter in history to hold two belts.
Another way, lightweight company. Yeah.
Yeah. And now he wants it. I don't blame him. To be fine. But who would make the best UFC fighter out of all of us? I'm going to say it's not me. You know,
why not?
I'm a lover, not a fighter.
Yeah, but you are also. You've got great bone density.
Yeah,
how would you even know that?
Because he's hit me. He's hit me at football, and it hurts.
You make it sound like I've like punched you or something.
No, but you have. You've gone through
on
me.
The pitch.
But then, and also, you're a big man. You have a big reach. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I was thinking that they're talking a lot about McGregor's reach helped him last night. Maybe my reach would help me. Dave, I reckon Dave would be quite good. You know, you've been hitting the gym lately. Dave, you've been getting shredded.
Take on McGregor, UFC 207. It's that man, yeah. Dave versus McGregor. I reckon I'd last maybe 10 seconds. I think the speed of his punches are just absolutely unreal. I quite like
yesterday. Image of Dave running around in a circle in the middle of the octagon.
I want that extra month.
Yeah. I tell you what, if we were going to get paid £10 million, I'd let McGregor punch me a few times.
Jesus.
It would be very. I suppose that's the point, isn't it? You know you're going to get money for getting punched in the face.
Yeah.
It's all worth
not
it.
Not too hard, you know what I mean?
To be fair, the opponent normally doesn't always get that much money. Like, that's one of. Excuse me. I think that's one of the misconceptions about the sport is that McGregor makes boatloads, but his opponent on it doesn't necessarily always make the same amount.
This is a special fight. This is someone that's untrained in UFC.
The big man, Varun Joshi, said he is praying that we answer his question. I'm just trying to find out where that question is. I'm on your Twitter feed, Varun. It could either be...
Unfortunately, God couldn't hook you up this week, Varun. Sorry about that.
He said, what is the answer to everything?
42. Yeah.
42. Nice. And the other question he might
not only for Xabi Alonso.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Of course. The other question he seems to be asking is, when are you going to do the mannequin challenge? It's all the rage right now. Tongue out emoji thing. I'd say never. We're ever going to do the mannequin challenge.
Surely
we only just filmed the Harlem Shake on Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? We've got to get round to all these viral sensations. So probably never.
We only just filmed Adam bouncing up and down on a trampoline for Christmas.
Chris, here is one for you, specifically for you, from Kenny J. Ribolo. He said, on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you rate FC Dallas's season?
A 9.
Wow.
They won't win MLS Cup. They went out to Seattle. But they did win the Supporters Shield, the US Open Cup. So they did the double, and they lost two of their key players during the course of the season. So to achieve that, I think that's huge for them. It'll push them so much further in terms of their development as a team. And I also think come the start of next year when they need to try and sign players, having that will be so much bigger for them because right now they are one of the big dogs in MLS.
Hmm. This one could be for you as well, Chris. Dwight K. Schrute, Stowe the Am Heslop on Twitter said, do you think my beloved Newcastle will win the EFL in brackets Capital One Cup?
No.
There you have it.
Absolutely not. Jose Mourinho is going to be lifting the first trophy of many.
They're doing well, but the squad is still a championship squad in so many ways. And the second it comes up against the Premier League or one of the better Premier League teams in the cup, I think it'll struggle.
Benitez does love that though, doesn't he? Like he loves a bit of. You know, remember when one of the only teams, was he the first manager, the first Premier League managers to win away at Barcelona? Arguably with Craig Bellamy up front the night after he hit John Arnarisa in the head with a golf club.
Yeah.
Nice guy though, right?
What a moment.
Benitez is, mate.
HJD Cornish said, what the hell is going on with Schalke? Dave, do you want to answer that?
I think Schalke have been in this weird spiral of getting managers that they feel have great promise, and then like Roberto Di Matteo, and then them actually turning out to be pretty bang average, and then losing a number of good key young players. Julian Draxler comes to mind. Obviously, they sold him to Wolfsburg because they kind of had to, in a way. You know, a pretty inconsistent player at Schalke. But I think that's kind of the problem with Schalke, is that a lot of these young, talented players that do look very good, the likes of Goretzka, the likes of Max Meyer, they just haven't got to that next level yet. Howard has been there for such a long time. But again, you look at the midfield this season, Benteleb's in there. He's the one that's controlling things. And when Benteleb's controlling your midfield, you know, you're not going the greatest away. Obviously, goal-scoring-wise this season, they've not done great. They conceded too many goals. But I think that with Schalke, eventually it's just going to click and they will become one of these super clubs. But at the moment, they just seem to be going the wrong way. Too short-term, and they're getting dodgy managers.
Here is a very good question from Gabriel Woots. Best big man and short man striker duo ever, actually, he's talking
Lawrence
about.
McKenna, he said, Boltwood.
He says, in my biased opinion, Del Piero and Trezeguet. # I am the whole. Any shouts for best big and short man striker duos?
Jan Koller and anybody?
Jan Koller and what the hell was his name? Milan Baroš.
There you go.
Yeah. Or maybe Michael Owen and Emil Heskey. Not a bad combo.
Not a bad combo. I always used to, well, it's not the best ever, but Spurs used to have Peter Crouch and Raphael van der Vaart, you know.
Peter Crouch had good partnerships with a couple of people, didn't he? The problem with Crouch was he scored a few too many goals for himself.
Surprisingly useful player. He seems to have sort of just now resigned himself to making jokes on Twitter. Now he's not getting much game time. Seems to be his current life. Guys, yeah. Tweet us out of the front three. Who are the best big and short man striker duos of all time?
Trying to think of others now. I
generally think you two would make a good strike force. Honestly, I reckon you'd make a good strike force. Boltwood dropping deep, using his size, holding the ball up. Lawrence McKenna on the edge of the area, playing the
Lawrence isn't that much shorter than me, though, is he?
Yeah, but
I know,
still...
it's quite different builds. Lawrence has the speed, the pace. You've got the physicality, the flair on the ball. I think it'd work quite nicely.
And Adam, with my finishing, I mean, you know, ultimately I was offended not to be put in that TFR five-a-side squad, and that you got in it was an abomination, considering that you got in it not wearing your bloody glasses, and I don't even play in glasses.
Yeah,
that was frankly insulting. The amount of times that I've been left out of the TFR squad at this point, mate.
Hey. Nothing to do with it.
I think Lawrence would make a good nuisance striker in that sense.
And believe me, I'm a real
nuisance. Yeah.
Yeah. Shearer Bellamy's one, Phillips
Quinn. Simple when you're playing in front of the deep line sweeper.
Chris.
That Monday's right.
Don't.
Monday.
I think you're more of a Libra. But Chris, do not say I think Lawrence is a nuisance striker and then compare me to Craig Bellamy.
No, I was sorry. I was saying those are other examples of big men, little men that worked.
Greg Bellamy.
Here is a very good question from Gushan at Gushan4 on Twitter. Thank you so much for your question. Do you think Diego Simeone will go to Inter Milan at the end of the season? All sorts of rumours flying around. Dave, what do you make of this one?
You know, I think something that he's made quite clear is he wants to go and manage his former clubs. So, obviously, in there we do have Atletico Madrid. We have the likes of Lazio. We have Inter Milan. Vélez in Argentina, Sevilla could be one. But this Inter Milan squad, right, it's quite likened to the squad that he came to Atletico Madrid with, being a squad that was really weird but really unbalanced in a certain way. This Atletico squad that Simeone came to had like Mario Suarez, Thiago, Arda Turan, Gabri, Koke and Diego, had quite a lot of central midfield or central players in the midfield. And if you kind of look at the Inter Milan team, it's a little bit similar to that in a way, where you have like Gary Medel, you have the likes of Kondogbia, you have Eva Benega, you know, you've got Brozovic. The list sort of goes on and on, you know, Joao Mario. And then you've got a striker that's lethal in Icardi. You know, when Simeone went to Atletico, striker that was lethal was Falcao. So it's quite weird how these squads are quite imbalanced, but they're imbalanced in quite a similar way. I think the one thing that you'd say is defensively, you know, Simeone came and, you had Godin there, Felipe Luis and Juanfran. You know, they're three players of Simeone's great back four, you'd say. Inter Milan less so. You know, they've been struggling for a defence for a number of seasons now. But Miranda's there, who was actually there the first time that Simeone took over at Atletico. So potentially it could happen. It is an interesting one. But yeah. What do you guys think?
I'd love to see Inter Milan return to the heights of European football again. They've got a great kit. They've got they represent the at least closer to working class around Milan, and I think it'd be good to see them a Milan side truly competitive again, not just sort of in a lowly entertaining way, but in a sort of, you know, proper way.
It would be good for Serie A to see kind of an A-list manager join the league. I mean, we've seen so many come to the Premier League. You know, you've got like Carlo and Ancelotti in the Bundesliga. To see someone like Simeone ditch La Liga to go to Serie A would be kind of a big statement. But I kind of don't want to see him leave Atletico just yet. I'd like him to stay for maybe one or two more seasons, depending on how this season works out, of course.
I wonder who would take over from him. That's what I'd be interested in.
Yeah, that's an interesting question as well, actually. Yeah.
Maybe a South American coach.
It would definitely be good for Inter Milan.
I'd love to see Bielsa just run one of those teams into the ground. Diego, it was great. Fucking O'Leary's coming.
Oh, lads. Like, okay, you know we used to do lots of running?
Yeah.
Twice as much now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely running into the ground.
Paul, get your bags packed, we're leaving.
Yeah.
Here is another great mission from...
No.
The Rob Meister.
Retire.
At Robert Creasy said, who is your favourite underrated player to ever play for your club? Oof, very good question. Very tough question as well. Your favourite underrated player to ever play for your club? Favourite, obviously, so it's subjective. Dave, have you got any shouts for potential Manchester United players? Come on, give us a couple.
Possibly.
Golden Boy himself.
Aaron Fletcher.
You love Darren Fletcher.
Are you sure it's not possible?
Bloody love.
He's so good at whenever United played Arsenal, Darren Fletcher used to just get in Arsenal's face and just completely destroy them on his own. It was brilliant viewing. But I think Park Ji-sung as well. He's got a special place in my heart.
Great shouts, both great shouts. Lawrence, anyone from Liverpool? I mean, yeah, just say your club. Yeah, Liverpool.
There are a lot of options. Luis Garcia is not a bad one for Liverpool. Sort of underrated, but did some key things for the club. It was very sort of key in the Rafolution. Mark Gonzalez, a short but magnificent career. In which time he also, I think we played against Yeovil or Luton, I can't remember, one or the other. And it was Mark Gonzalez, the shortest player in the Football League, against a player who was 6'7" at the time. It was just one of the funniest combinations of play. And he was literally up against him. And they played a player who was 6'7", I think at right back. I just remember being like, that's incredible. Leto was a good player. Only ever made it at Panathinaikos. Sorry. Suso, fantastic, underrated player for Liverpool. The reason I say Leto...
He's finally kicking on at AC Milan now, actually. It was quite interesting. This season, he's been pivotal in their research.
Yeah, lovely kid, great kid, and seems like a nice guy as well. I think his girlfriend's a fashion blogger. Although that could be Pacheco. Can't remember. Pacheco left. He was meant to be the next big thing. Who else is underrated? Steve Finnan.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah.
There you go. Chris, any Newcastle shouts?
Probably not.
Lawrence McKenna for TFRFC.
Good point, Chris.
Ooh,
yeah, I agree with that. Chronically.
Constantly overlooked.
Constantly overlooked because he once played, well, twice, maybe four times played at centre-back. Lawrence, where do you play?
You know, when Eagle rules common sense, that's basically what happened.
Yeah. Lawrence, where do you normally play? I'm normally a left winger. Can you do centre back for us, mate? Yeah, fantastic.
Can you go in the opposite position? Chris, Newcastle plays?
Newcastle plays underrated. Peter Lovenkrantz was a little bit of underrated. I'm trying to think. Not many, really.
I'm trying to think back to when...
David Batty, probably, going back a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good shout. I'm trying to think back to when I was watching Spurs when I was younger. They were they were always so awful. There were so many
Chris Perry.
Chris Perry. I actually met Chris Perry.
What about Chris?
That was like one of the ones.
Is it Ziegler?
Yeah, Ziegler.
Ziegler.
The guy that had an absolute cannon of a left foot.
Yeah, yeah. He scored a few bangers in his time. I was a big fan of Stefan Iversen when he came over. He got the assist. The one bright patch Spurs had was when they won the League Cup in 99. I think it was the Worthington's Cup, maybe at that point. It was like some weird ale. He got the assist for another sort of underrated player, Alan Nielsen, for the winner sort of thing. Sergei Rebrov, I used to quite like, even though he wasn't great. I'm not sure.
Do you know what Sergei Rebrov used to like doing in his spare time when he was at Spurs?
No, go on.
He used to like operating a CB radio.
Brilliant. Side on.
That is some great trivia for you there, guys.
How many
some
candles are you burning?
Blinding trivia for you.
Imagine what you would do if you are a fan of... you're just a fan and you're all there going, side on. Yep. How many candles are you burning? You have a little chat and then, you know, that both, I think, legitimate phrases used on CB radio. And then...
Spina is a bit of an expert here.
You haven't listened to one podcast about it, and then you out of nowhere comes out of the phrase Sidon, and you're like, hold on a minute, it's the Rushkies. No, it's Rebrov. Shit. And then from there it goes downhill.
Oh dear. There's only one question to end on, guys. John Shin, the main man, writes in saying, thanks for the love and shouts on the previous podcast, guys. John, you deserve it. He says, can Trump do it on a cold, rainy night at Stoke?
He can do it on a cold, rainy night in Florida.
Yeah, Trump can do anything, I think.
I don't think so, I don't think Messi can do it on a rainy night in Stoke, so I don't think Donald Trump can. That's my logic anyway.
Donald Trump? Did you make you say John Shin with Donald Trump?
No, I said Donald.
Did you say Donald Chump?
And that was Donald the Chump. Moment Tim was hauled away for war crime.
see ya!
Yeah, I'm assuming you guys, you talked about Donald Trump on the Wednesday.
Not really. We kind of waited for you.
We brushed upon it, and then we said we need the real politic head.
Yeah, the real political expert to come in. I'm still trying to wrap my head around it, to be honest. I've been sort of digesting a lot of podcasts, reading a lot of articles, trying to understand, you know, the logistics of how it happened, you know, in terms of who voted for him, why they voted for him, which states went for him.
I think we all understand why it happened, but I don't think the why justifies that. We don't understand how it happened, but we don't, and therefore we understand why it happened, because, you know, why and how are mixed. But people seem to be mistaking people want to add the why, so it's sort of be like, yeah. Oh, it's because, you know, it's because, if you're on the left, it's because of racism. Racism's on the rise, and if you're on the right, it's sort of like, well, it's because, you know, the white middle classes were frustrated in America; they didn't feel like they were getting any. And ultimately, like, I think it's actually that they were just two really shit candidates.
I think it is,
and the election wasn't as sort of out, as spread as people thought. It wasn't like Obama completely beat out so many past. The two previous elections were so pro Obama, it was ridiculous. But this one was not the same because it didn't represent change or the political change people wanted.
Yeah, I think that there's so many. It's not just one reason. There's so many factors that sort of go into it and sort of have led to this result. And it kind of seems almost obvious in hindsight. But like you say, obviously, Hillary Clinton was a massively unpopular candidate. I think you look at the stats for... So Donald Trump got, I think, 100,000 less votes than Mitt Romney got when he lost to Obama in 2012, whereas Hillary Clinton got something like 5 million less votes than Obama did in 2012. So obviously she didn't get the turnout that would have, you know, delivered the White House.
She didn't mobilize people, essentially.
Exactly, exactly. But that's just one fact, you know, Hillary Clinton being a weak candidate. There's all these other sort of factors going into it. People wanted change. People wanted to sort of throw this chaotic sort of candidate into the system, which is Donald Trump. I was just still trying to see him sitting next to Obama there, having that meeting in the White House, just trying to wrap my head around it. It's just, you know, the mind boggles.
I think this is also sort of the first election again. Every election is influenced more and more by social media. And I think we're seeing yet another election that's been influenced by the, I don't want to say manipulation, but by a really clever use from the right and not so much the left of social media. And Hillary's use of social media was very conventional. It was quite boring. Donald Trump's use of social media and the use of, you know, movements like the alt-right and also just the right wing in America, which is Fox News and all those sort of guys, was clever. You know, it became about propaganda. And, you know, it was not about facts anymore. It was about arguing with characters and what facts those characters represented. And that's really clever because it clouds the water of what is really happening. And the fact is that now that he's sort of even just a couple of days into this, it's sort of like, right, maybe the war might not happen. And maybe there are elements of Obamacare that will keep. And those people who, you know, elected him may now be like, well, hold on a minute. No, you ran on this. Do you know what I mean?
The parallels to Brexit are just really astonishing, I think, you know, to see the shock of everyone when actually the results came in overnight, to see, as you say, sort of Donald Trump sort of walking back on a few sort of promises now about Obamacare. You know, you saw it the day after when Farage was saying the money's not going to be spent on the NHS.
Nigel Farage was very different because Nigel Farage was not officially backed by anyone. Whereas actually the Republican Party took Donald Trump under their wing when they realised that they just had a field of shit candidates.
Well, he was at loggerheads with the Republican Party in many ways, and he sort of tried to have a go at Paul Ryan, who's kind of the Speaker of the House, one of the most prominent Republicans in America. So it's I think he came to represent not being the establishment. He's kind of very anti-establishment. At the same time, he's now going to hire a lot of kind of career politicians and those figures into his cabinet. It's really. He's very clever. Half of me thinks Donald Trump is incredibly stupid and he says these incredibly obnoxious, xenophobic things. But half of me is that you have to sort of appreciate that he's been very clever almost to get into White House.
I also think he's been somewhat of a puppet for whoever picked him. You know, there are a lot of people who picked him. And essentially, I think this works out quite well for the Republican Party because it means they can position people around him who they consider to be people who would push their agenda more than anyone else's, you know, because this is ultimately a PR campaign for him more than anyone else.
It's almost like he didn't want to win the presidency. You know, he has got himself in a bit too deep. The other interesting thing, I think, and perhaps more worrying, is that like I'm saying about Brexit, it's not just America. It's not just Britain. You know, we're seeing this sort of rise of almost kind of right-wing politics across Europe as well. You know, the National Front in France is looking like they're going to make big gains in that country as well. So it's not just something that's isolated to one country or one continent. It seems to be on the rise, which is potentially quite worrying.
Nigel Farage can suck a dick, am I right?
Well, he's Donald Trump's best mate now, isn't he?
Yeah,
they an image sort of... I don't need.
But he's now, there's talk of Nigel Farage is going to be like a special advisor to Trump because he's in the inner circle almost, you know, and no one in British politics has the time.
Can we roll the inner circle down a hill?
It would be preferable.
Do you also not find it really weird that both of these men who represent the anti-establishment are both wholly embedded in the establishment?
Yes, and filthy rich. They're trying to appeal to the working class. It's kind of like, they don't have a clue.
If you ever needed a microcosm for 2016, it's the fact that Nigel Farage now looks like potentially being a special ambassador to Europe for Trump. So he will be a foreign migrant worker, having spent most of the year lamenting those same people and demanding that we gain control of our borders.
It's it's been an interesting year. I think that's
the best. I know we don't talk politics much, but he is an odious twat. I love it.
I do like that phrase.
Odious, yes, odious twat, yeah. Who's your favourite odious twat in football?
Yeah, let us know at the Front Three on Twitter.
Get that beat machine ready.
We are going to be back next week. We're actually going to be back on Thursday, guys. We're changing things up a little bit on the Front Three here. We've decided that we're going to move the podcast from Sundays and Wednesdays to Mondays and Thursdays. It's going to give us more time to digest the weekend's football, to bring you a better podcast at the end of the day. So it's all good, essentially. So we're going to start from this week coming. So on Thursday, you'll be getting the regular sort of Q&A podcast. And we're back on Monday with a recap of the weekend's action, reviewing all the Premier League, as well as some of the key games from around Europe. So until Thursday, guys, Dave, where can the good people find you?
On a vlog on TF3. There's been a few of them. Go and check them out. They're always fun, always good. And you can see me doing some stuff on a skateboard, which is always exciting.
Yeah, that's the key bit of the vlog.
The skateboarding. Lawrence?
Probably on the YouTube channel as well. Go for it. Bang. YouTube the Front Three. Can you YouTube things? Yeah, sure. YouTube the Front Three.
Oh, yeah, of course you can. It's a verb. Chris, have we got a clean sweep here?
Going to be on Red Men TV doing an edition of Glass. Looking forward to us.
A bit of inside baseball there. Guys, do head over to the Front Three on YouTube. Check out the vlog from last week that Lawrence made. Brilliant vlog. Let us know what you think of it. Let us know what you want to see on the channel. All that good stuff. Until Thursday, have a bloody good week.
Bye.
Oh, can I also just say, if you didn't get your question answered today, we might include some of your questions in the vlog.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Shopify helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like that, let's put it online and see what happens stage.
And the site is live.
That we opened a store and need a fast checkout stage.
Thanks, you're all set.
That count it up and ship it around the globe stage.
This one's going to Thailand.
And that, wait, did we just hit 1 million orders stage? Whatever your stage, businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/listen.
Dun, 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 dun. Perfect. Perfect.